He's got a big entourage down there, doesn't he?
Bigger than Eddie Murphy.
Bigger than Eddie. Anyway, he's here, so we're the interview's going to take place here in a few minutes.
Brew some coffee for him. He wants to. He's on California time, so it's like the middle of the night, I think.
571-9696, if you have a question that you would like to ask our guest this morning. All right. Mr. Takei.
Good morning. How are you?
He's here this morning. Man. Come right over here. We have a seat warm for you.
Yeah, have right a seat over here.
Over this way.
Great. This is great. Thanks for coming down here. Appreciate you getting up this early and...
Well, you know, I got up at 3 o'clock California time to be with you.
Which is 6 our time.
6 o'clock your time.
Yeah. How are you? Boy, you look great.
Oh, I feel great.
You are looking good.
Well, fresh washed down air here. I left Los... I hate to talk about Los Angeles there, but you know, believe me, I appreciate yours.
Yeah.
I went from Los Angeles to Berkeley for my niece's graduation. Yesterday was their graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew in from San Francisco. Believe me, San Francisco's air was beautiful. It was crystalline. Yeah. And here you have freshly washed air.
It's clean. Yeah, we've taken a shower here.
Yes,
the Ohio Valley. Well, great. Listen, I'm going to just play one quick one here for you. Had you ever heard these records that
Bill Shatner?
Had you heard that?
And Lucy in the Sky. Now that is scary. At this hour in the morning, no less.
This one's even scarier. This is Mr. Spock on the Asylum at QAnon.
In the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost one minute of sleeping, worrying about the way things might have been.
Mr. Takei, doesn't that sound dignified?
Can we call you George or
Please
Sulu?
Please do,
or?
I prefer that.
Okay, let me... real quick now, for those of you just joining us here, the Trek Fest Star Trek convention takes place tomorrow and Sunday at the Holiday Inn Hurstbourne off of Interstate 64. Now, you were just telling us you do several of these a year.
Yes, as a matter of fact, this year it began with a Star Trek convention in Boston, and I did every weekend for 3 months straight at the beginning of the year because we had something of a crisis. Paramount was planning on doing Star Trek VI. With a flashback story going back to our Academy days and recasting all of the original characters with younger actors who resemble us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I needed to report to my true bosses, the fans,
and
let them know what's being done to their Star Trek.
And there was quite an uproar.
Yeah, indeed, there was. It was a tidal wave of letters coming into the Paramount chairman's office.
You have to figure when they go ahead and scratch plans for a major motion picture as a result of hearing from people that you definitely had some sway in there.
It was massive.
Yeah.
And so they were convinced.
What is the what are the plans now? Is there a new film in the works?
Well, frankly, no. There's nothing happening at this point. I used to say it was uncertain, but it's quite certainly nothing. Star Trek V did very poorly.
Mm.
It lost, at least according to Paramount's calculations, $30 million. And
it hasn't made that up. No, in the video, the home video.
You know, I'm absolutely confident that the Paramount doesn't lose money, and eventually they're going to make that money back. You know, the videos, the foreign sales, the TV sales, etc., the merchandising, you know, all that sort of thing. But their rule of thumb in measuring the success of a film is the first run theatrical release, and in that, it lost $30 million, and so. They were trying to scheme a way of getting Star Trek done cheaper. And they thought, you know, by getting young actors who they could get at scale, that would bring the bottom line a little bit further down. Because it's true, the costs have gone up. Shatner and Leonard Nimoy's salary combined, just the two of them combined, now equals the entire budget for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Right
off the top.
No kidding. Now, what about the rest of you? I mean,
we're peon workers.
Well, seriously, no? Because the whole myth around Star Trek is such a family kind of deal. I mean, every one of you are an integral part.
Absolutely, that's the way we feel about it.
But those are the two.
But they don't pay us like that.
Huh.
They pay us like migrant farm workers.
Shatner's director's chair.
I was going to ask you now, what was the feeling on the set during the making of Star Trek V? Did you think, this is going to be a turkey? Or did you kind of think it might work? Or was Shatner, were you guys laughing behind his back or what?
No.
Because as a Star Trek fanatic, I thought it was good. I liked it.
Oh, you liked it?
I rented it, took it home.
Well, we had, now in retrospect, I say this. You get the script and you have some reservations about it. You have some things that you think you could improve,
Yeah, yeah.
But once you get started on the film, you want it to be a success. So, you do everything you can mm-hmm. to make it work, mm-hmm. to make it something that's going to be a project that we can be proud of.
Yeah.
You approach every project like that, but nevertheless, your critical mind deep down is saying, actually there were like about four or five plots in Star Trek V.
Right.
None really, I don't think, developed. And there were a lot of idiosyncrasy. I mean, inconsistencies.
Was it Mr. Shatner's inexperience at directing or the script?
Well, I think Bill tried to take on too much. Bill is not a storyteller. He is not a writer.
Yeah.
And yet he wanted to, it was his story. He proudly announced to everybody before the movie came out.
Yeah.
After that, he got a little bit
quiet. He disavowed
quiet.
Any knowledge.
That wasn't me. I wrote that.
Because now working with Nimoy was he's done some great directing.
Well, Leonard has a good dramatic sense, and he also recognizes that the strength of a project is in getting good people to work with you and recognizing good talent and giving them free rein. He got good people to write. He got good people to help him with the technical aspects, the special effects, Whereas with Bill, he has a lot of energy. He likes to also control things, to dominate, be the show, And that's a wonderful thing, but it can also have its downside.
Kill you.
The criticisms that I read in the reviews were that it was just too much Shatner.
It's an ensemble.
It came from his mind.
Sure.
Auteur films? How's that pronounced? The filmmaker is the author.
Right.
Auteur
right.
films.
That's right. Yeah.
And Bill kind of fancies himself that. But you got to have a lot of, you got to be a Renaissance man. You got to be a writer. You got to be a visionary. You got to be a person who can work with other actors. You got to be a technical person. And
purely ignore the importance of the rest of the cast.
Oh yeah, because it's such an ensemble. I mean,
it is an ensemble. And he, as you say, he focused in on just a few of the cast.
Yeah.
But the success of Star Trek has always been that they use that word family feeling.
And it was.
People contributing their unique strengths.
Yeah.
People contributing their diversity to making up the whole,
Right.
And that's always been the philosophy of Star Trek. And unfortunately, in that one, it was not. Mm-hmm. It was a trio. And I think that had an adverse impact, too.
I think so, too. Okay, we're going to pay some bills, and we'll come right back. We will open the phones here in a little bit, 571-9696, and let you talk to our guest this morning, George Takei. This is great. We have a guest here this morning, the Trek Fest, Star Trek Convention, happening tomorrow and Sunday, Holiday in Hurstbourne, and it starts at 11 a.m. both days. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Before we go any further, now, you've done a lot of stage work.
Right.
And I was just flipping down the cable box one night and saw Year of the Dragon.
Oh, did you?
Oh, my God.
You mean it's still airing?
Powerful. It was a while back. I couldn't tell you when
I saw it. I've been trying to get a copy of that.
Have you really?
It's been impossible. I did. It's that PBS station in New York that we did it for, mm-hmm. and they've lost track of it.
That was
but
powerful.
You saw it recently.
That was powerful.
Oh, that's one of the juicy, bloody red meats that I got a chance to sink my teeth into.
How much of that do you do, and how much are you going to be doing?
Well, two summers ago, I did a play at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, the famous drama festival, and that was a glorious summer for me. I love the city of Edinburgh, and to live.
Prize, wasn't it?
Yeah, first prize. We won the Scotsman First Award.
Yeah.
It's their big newspaper there, but that was a glorious feeling to be doing a play, a live theater mm-hmm. with a living, breathing,
audience.
Gasping, sobbing audience out there,
So you're going to be doing more
and then
of that.
To be living in that glorious city of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful, wonderful summer.
Reading your bio, you are a busy gentleman. I mean, you're doing stuff on the city council.
Oh, my.
Involved in a lot of civic
stuff. It's a public transit.
How many of the other cast members spend their off time doing the. You ran for office out there.
Yeah,
you're involved in a lot of stuff. We were laughing earlier that. You know, we were reading your bio and all this stuff you're involved in, and then we said, I wonder what Scotty does between here. It looks like he's just drinking beer and eating
he's
Twinkies.
He's tinkering with the engine, sir.
Yeah. He's eating Twinkies and, you know, watching TV and stuff.
Oh, he works at it very seriously. He's very dedicated.
He's dedicated. Are the rest of them as involved in things as you are? A lot of stage work?
Walter is a very, very good writer. And
this is Chekhov.
Yes. And Nichelle Nichols, Uhura, is an enormously gifted singer and nightclub performer. And she's got a one-woman show now called Legends, where she does her impersonation of all the legendary black entertainers of history.
Okay.
Billie Holiday, Josephine Baker.
So she's no longer doing NASA. Wasn't she like...
Well, that was a long, long time ago.
Okay.
She's still, of course, supportive of them. But
now, you joined the TV show in the second season?
No. I was there from the pilot film.
But you weren't...
There were two pilots.
Were you the helmsman?
I know. In the pilot film, I was the botanist downstairs.
Okay.
But the pilot film is essentially a demonstration film, you know?
Yeah.
And they decided from that, in their good wisdom, that this character was too interesting to leave down in the botany lab.
Good.
They wanted to bring him up to the bridge.
That's right, because that was your hobby in later episodes.
That's right.
In your quarters had all these weird plants growing. That's right, okay.
So when the season began... I was at the helm.
Mm-hmm.
In the pilot film, it was Bill, Leonard, Jimmy, and myself. When we started the first season, we added DeForest and Nichelle, Bones and Uhura.
Right.
And the second season, during the hiatus between the first and the second season, I took off to do the Green Berets with John Wayne. And we got delayed. And I couldn't be back in time to begin the second season. So they brought in Walter Koenig, Chekhov, to do Sulu's lines.
Okay.
And then I came back, and so it was a
I'm glad they kept your seat open for you.
Yes, I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they brought in a good actor who's become a good friend as well.
We had a gentleman call earlier who had to go to work and had a question that he wanted us to ask you. In one of the episodes... I was trying to think, too, what the reason was. The whole crew was going crazy and doing weird stuff. You ended up coming up and down the halls of the Enterprise with a fencing sword, shirt off, doing that. Now, he wanted to know if you had actually done some fencing or if they just coached you for that episode, because he said you look great. And he fences, and he wanted to know.
As a kid, my heroes were people like Earl Flynn, Adventures of Robin Hood.
Sure.
Gene Kelly, D'Artagnan, and the Three Musketeers,
Burt
Lancaster, Crimson Pirates. So, yes, I bring a vast history of fencing experience, too.
You look darn cool.
He's a kid with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Exactly,
like
that's what it was.
Colonel
As a matter
Lance.
Of fact, though, about 3 weeks before that, we shot the show, I found out that I was going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I rushed out and took my first formal fencing lesson about a week before that show was shot.
So you,
and so what you saw was just about a week's worth of frenzied, intense fencing lesson taking. But it turned out the coach that I found was the man who choreographed the fencing sequences in The Adventures of Robin Hood. And he had doubled for Basil Rathbone.
Really?
Mr. Faulkner. And he was a real inspiration.
Yeah.
By that time, he was in his 60s or 70s, but still in great shape. You know, that rigid, that straight posture, the barrel chest, you know, great pectoral muscles. He was still teaching into his 90s and still had that fantastic posture in that body. You know, it's like ballet dancers. You know, they can turn old, but they have that great posture and that carriage. Well, that's the way Mr. Faulkner was. He was 90 years old, but he had a fantastic, you know, carriage with him. He was a real inspiration.
Do you have a favorite episode from the old TV series?
Oh, we don't like that adjective old. We like the adjective original.
Original and still the best. No question.
Absolutely. The classic.
Yeah.
That very episode, Naked Time, is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is Mirror, Mirror, where we explore the flip universe, evil.
We were talking about that.
I had a scar over the... No, that was Leonard. Leonard had the Van Dyke.
And
I had the scar, the fencing scar, over the eye. Yeah, that so, was, and it, as actors, it gave us a chance to stretch. That's the fun thing about doing science fiction. You know, you could, it's a TV series, and you're ensconced in a character, but you're not ensconced in one character.
Yeah.
You know, it's like repertory theater. You get to flip out and become a swashbuckler in one show.
Yeah.
Or you explore the negative universe and you can play a villain, an absolutely amoral, cutthroat, rapacious villain, you know.
And enjoy it.
And that's, you know, that's that was the fun part about doing Star Trek.
Were you happy when it was over? When the show ended?
Oh, no, no, we were devastated. We were absolutely devastated. You know, at the beginning of each episode, we announced the five-year voyage of the Starship Enterprise. Mm-hmm. We'd been on for only three years.
You were expecting it to go five.
We fully intended. We were hoping for it, certainly. You know, in television, you never expect anything to be fait accompli.
Several more seasons to watch.
Yeah,
that'd be
great.
Yeah. And here it is, 25 years later, and we're still talking about it. That is
still going
a
strong.
Phenomenon.
It's amazing. It really is.
Actually, next year will be the real silver anniversary for Star Trek, but we shot the pilot back in 65, so for us, it's 25 years.
What do you think of the new show, new series?
I think it's good. I think it's good. It got off to a kind of a wobbly start. But I think it's found its legs. The stories are very imaginative. And I'm delighted with the fact that, you know, the ideals that Star Trek, our Star Trek stands for, the vision of the human future,
mm-hmm.
that these elements, these visions can be transferred to another cast and another set of actors. I think that's
the,
very
the technology has definitely improved. They said now the scripts are just great science fiction, but it lacks that family feeling. It doesn't have that.
Well, thank you.
The magic that the original show had.
We're magical.
It was okay. Let's pay some bills. We'll come right back, and as promised, we'll let you call in some questions here for our guest, Mr. Sulu from the original Star Trek, in town for the Trek Fest, which happens tomorrow. And Sunday, and it's at the Holiday Inn Hurstbourne. Opens at 11 o'clock each morning, and just loaded with stuff. If you're a Star Trek fan, you've got to get over there and just jump in with both feet. They've got everything. Now, some of the things you sell, I mean, you've got the blooper reels that you can buy.
Oh, they've got everything and anything you've wanted about Star Trek. Trek costumes, phaser guns, games.
Stein,
and a chance
well,
to meet.
Some of them are stunning.
a chance to meet and talk to, and possibly have your picture taken with Mr. Sulu from the original cast. This is great having you in here. We appreciate you getting
out. Oh, it's good fun.
Telling, the gentleman you brought with you back there that we've had on the Graham Nash has been in the station. Steph Kennison has been. You've never been more excited.
Oh man, I really haven't. The first time. I really
flattering. Yeah. Oh, well, now, this is a man of good taste, intelligence, and sensitivity.
See? Star Trek, sure. Now we were just talking while the record was playing there about how did you stay busy as soon as the series folded? What was there about 10 years between then and the first?
That's
film
right,
going to
exactly
production?
10 years. We folded in '69. We were canceled in '69, and we began work on Star Trek: The Motion Picture in '78, and that was released in '79.
Right.
So there was a 10-year span between.
And you went right to work 2 weeks later.
I went right
boom.
To work. I was playing a hippie flower child photographer on Bracken's World. And then I went from that to producing and hosting my own public affairs show on KNBC.
KNBC Radio in Los Angeles?
No, television.
Television?
Television.
Oh, okay.
Expressions East West.
Okay. Now, you have a couple of films that are in the can getting ready to come out.
That's right.
Let us know about those.
Well, the one that's coming out this fall is titled Blood Oath with Brian Brown, that fine Australian actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm real excited about this one. I think it's going to be a real sensation, a shocker for the United States. It's an historically accurate film. It's about the United States' complicity in the releasing of Japanese war criminals after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read, heard, and know a lot about the war crimes trial in Europe.
Right.
You know, the Nuremberg trial and so forth. But we know nothing, we hear nothing about what happened in the Pacific. And that's because the United States' hand is not clean on this. I play the commandant of an island north of Australia, Ambon Island. And when the Australians retake the island after the war, there was an Australian prisoner of war camp on that island. When the Australians retake that island, they discover evidences of some massive atrocities. Mm-hmm. And so they convene a war crimes tribunal. And, of course, my having been the commandant, I'm the prime suspect. But it turns out that I'm also a baron in private life and a second cousin of the emperor's. Now, in the meantime, General Douglas MacArthur had decreed that the emperor would be exempted from war crimes charges because he needs him as a figurehead to manage post-war Japan. But he wasn't counting on the emperor having a large extended family. And it makes that emperor being exempted posture a little awkward if his cousin is being tried and found guilty for war crimes. So he sends an American major over to finesse the situation. But the prosecuting attorney is Brian Brown, and he is straight arrow. He's going to go purely
so this is almost just a courtroom, almost kind of drama, then.
It is a courtroom drama, but it's more than a courtroom drama. Yeah, it does move considerably outside. There's the pressure from the Australian press to hold a kangaroo court. It's kind of a strange term in Australia, but you know, their sons, their husbands, their brothers suffered in these camps. Right. So, you know, they want the reverse. You know, evidence or not, just find the Japs guilty. You know,
do you find any irony, or does it how does it affect you to be playing a commandant from a Japanese prisoner of war camp when you yourself spent World War II with your mom and dad in an internment camp in Arkansas?
In the United States.
In the United States.
And
you were born here.
I'm an American citizen. My parents are, too. We were. My father's gone now, you know. And still, to be incarcerated behind barbed wires, suddenly your citizenship means nothing. You know, we believe in a due process here. Mm-hmm. But there was no charges, no trial.
And that was never done to the Germans.
Nor to the Italians, and we were at war with them. In fact, my grandfather put all his property with his best friend, who was an Italian gentleman, and they were good friends because he got the property back from his Italian friend.
After the war.
He didn't, you know, I mean, that was a risky thing for my grandfather to do, as it turned out.
It's a little ironic, and now you're playing these roles.
And here I am, So there, you know, a lot of reverberations, resonances for me, my having been in an American concentration camp, mm-hmm. and then to be playing the commandant of a Japanese concentration camp, and you know, to be tried for it. But
How old were you?
2 years old, from 2 until 7, I guess, when I was in behind barbed wires.
Born in Los Angeles.
Born in L.A.
Spent the war in a concentration camp.
Yeah,
pretty wild.
Yeah, it was a strange experience. I do remember. You know, I was too young to really understand that situation. I mean, for my parents, it was the darkest period of their lives.
Sure.
But for a child, it was kind of fun. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I remember tromping through the swamps in the summertime. I remember seeing my first hog, you know, and they were huge, enormous dinosaurs. Much bigger than me. You know, like, they were like about 100 times bigger than me, and the smelliest things, you know, grunting and snorting and wallowing. And in the wintertime, believe it or not, snows in Arkansas.
Yep. Sure.
So we played in the snow. I have memories of that. But I also remember those barbed wires, and I remember those high guard towers.
Oh, the sadness in your parents.
Oh, yeah. I remember frequently waking up in the middle of the night, you know, and seeing my parents in conversation over the kerosene lamp, and my mother would be sobbing, you know. In retrospect now, I'm sure they were talking about that experience.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, I really didn't understand what was going on.
We're going to pay a bill or two, and we will come right back. I don't want you to go. I want you to stay here for all day. Let's stay here all day. Go to my house and play Star Trek on computer. I've got that, too.
Now, we're having great fun here, aren't we?
It's 14 till 9 o'clock. Our guest this morning, Mr. George Takei from the original Star Trek cast, Mr. Sulu, you will know him as, and he will be in town today, tomorrow, and Sunday for the Trek Fest happening. It goes from 11 until 4 or 5?
4, 5.
11 to 6 o'clock.
6. We can count.
From 11 to 6.
It'll be a holiday in Hurricane.
And we might be carrying on the bar a little bit later than that, too.
All right. That sounds good. I'm going tomorrow. I've already set it up with his advance man over here. I'm gonna be there at 11 o'clock getting some of these things. Now, you have autograph and photograph sessions.
That's
you
right.
answer questions.
That's right.
Now, explain to me what the games are. You have Wheel of Fortune. You do it.
Well, you know what they're like on TV, right?
Yeah.
Now, I am very poor at it, but we boldly go where we're even poor.
Okay, so you sort of host it. You're the game show host.
I'm a participant in it.
But it
depends on the category. Certain categories I'm fairly good at, and other categories I'm a disaster at.
Okay.
So, you know, I get absolutely devastated, but that's part of the fun of the whole thing, isn't it?
Plus, there is a costume contest for anyone who... He has some star. We had a guy show up once in an admiral uniform that he had made himself.
What's so peculiar about that? I've had
imagine you have
green bodied antennaed female aliens that have nothing on besides their green bodies.
Seriously?
At one costume contest, she had this diaphanous cape and green antennas. And then once she got on stage, she opened up the cape, and there was that green body.
what time is this going on tomorrow? What time is it?
Oh, boy. I imagine you can tell us some bizarre stories here related
to
indeed. The public approaching.
They are out of this world.
Now, do people... you hear this a lot from people that are in various hit series, that a lot of people come up to you on the street or in airports and talk to you as if you are Mr. Sulu, and you really are Mr. Sulu.
They really think that we are. But then, this was a few years ago, but I had a charming experience of that. I was waiting for a plane at Dulles Airport, and I was reading a newspaper, and this man sitting across from me kept peering over his newspaper, at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I thought, well, he's recognized me. So I kind of acknowledged that with a smile and a nod. And so he just beamed, and he folded up his newspaper, came over and sat next to me, and he engaged me in conversation, and we were having a great conversation. Then his flight was called, and he had to leave. So before he left, he had to get the autograph. So he pulled out this pad and said, can you have this? Can I have your autograph on this? I got to rush for my plane now. But, I never miss an episode of Quincy.
That's great.
So I signed it, Best Wishes, Bob Ito.
I love it. That's great. Okay. Now, when is your new film coming out?
Blood Oath is coming out this fall.
Okay.
And then later, hopefully, I'll have another one coming out titled Return from the River Kwai, but that's been hogtied by litigation back and forth over that title, that word.
Okay, yeah.
River Kwai.
Because of the original.
But it's going to be sort of a continuance of, where the old film
That's right.
left
it's,
off?
It picks up where the bridge was destroyed.
Right.
It's the story of the retreat of the Japanese from the River Kwai Valley.
Okay.
And what happened with the prisoners. It's an exciting Rip Snorton good adventure story, but that will have to wait until they get the legal aspects all worked out. It's been released in Europe and in Japan. And I've been telling my friends, if you want to see it, you can see it in London. And my mother actually flew out to Tokyo to see it.
Jeez. Isn't that weird? Now, there are no plans in the works for another Star Trek movie at
this point. At this point, nothing is happening.
Which doesn't mean there won't be one, but there's...
Well, it becomes highly unlikely now. The more time passes, the more unlikely it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
We were hoping that, 1991 would be the silver anniversary of Star Trek, 25 years. And that would have been a wonderful time to come out with a new Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to miss that because we need to have a decision now in order to be, be able to hit that deadline.
I always thought that
deadline.
The confrontation between the two empires, between the Federation and the Klingon, should have been resolved.
Been great. That would have been a great way to
galactic
end
war or something,
the ultimate and final galactic battle.
Now, did you ever direct any of the TV episodes?
No, I did not.
Did you ever want to? I mean, have you ever...
I think we all have the ego to want to, but none of the actors ever directed any of the TV episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard directed two of the movies, and as you know...
Bill did the last
Bill.
One.
Yeah.
Yes, we should have dialed that at that time when Bill got assigned to it. 911! Help! Help!
The next time he sits in a director chair, call him. 911. That's funny. Okay, I'd like to open the phone here for a minute and see if we can get a couple of listeners to get a chance. That's great. Hi, are you still there?
I sure am.
Okay, what's your name?
Patricia.
Patricia?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am a Star Trek fan with a life.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Okay. Yes, Patricia with a life.
Beg your pardon?
Go ahead. What's your question?
When I was coming out of the theater after Star Trek V, the hardcore Trekkies were criticizing the fact that overt religion was in the plot. Have you heard this criticism? I've heard it a lot.
Over religion, by that you mean too much religion?
The fact that, you know,
looking for God, I guess, being the plot.
God just, in the eyes of the Trekkies, just shouldn't mix. And I was wondering how you felt about that.
That we should not have religious allusions or elements in Star Trek?
Right.
No, I don't think so. I thought it was kind of old hat in that we did something like that with Star Trek, the motion picture. But I certainly don't think it's inappropriate for us to, you know, religion is one of the prime elements in human civilization, a belief, a faith, and to explore that as part of our exploration of humankind, I don't think is inappropriate at all. Although I do think that it would have been nice if we could have approached it in a fresh way rather than a redo, more or less, of The Wizard of Oz.
Okay. All right, Patricia.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right. Now, which of the motion pictures was your favorite? Did you have one?
Of the motion pictures, yeah. I think my favorite is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
The Voyage Home.
Mine as well.
About
the whales and that subtext about our responsibility in the environmental chain.
Yeah, you were a couple years ahead of that. The whole movement that's starting
now. That's right, the environment movement. Sure. That came out in 1987, I think, or 86, was it? Yeah. We shot it in 86, and I think it came out in 87.
It seemed like we were talking a little bit earlier about in the 3 years that Star Trek was in production, some of the original scripts were great science fiction. I mean, you had Asimov writing for you and just...
Sturgeon, Norman Spinrad.
And then the network geeks took over. And the scripts just sort of went by the wayside.
Just became an adventure series.
Yeah.
A monster of a month, or a monster of the week kind of thing.
What was the feeling on the set? Did the cast sort of feel, boy, they're killing us. They're killing this show.
Well, you know, Gene Roddenberry left the show for all rights and purposes after the second season.
Mm-hmm.
He was there in the credits as the executive producer, but he wasn't with us. He wasn't on the lot. And it was visible, it was palpable, his absence, his good guidance.
Yeah.
And I do think that the quality of the scripts deteriorated tremendously the third season.
Now, are you all close, pretty close, the original cast members? Do you see each other? And
yeah, we're good friends. I was on the phone with Walter, just a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Nichelle is a very, very dear friend.
Yeah.
Leonard and I are political kindred souls, but, Leonard's directing career has taken off now, so we don't get together that much. But, you know, I've been involved in a lot of common political and charitable efforts with Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Jimmy Doohan is a good drinking buddy.
So Scotty really does tip back a few.
Yeah. He's not an actor. He believes in that. He lives that.
He's devoted to it. I love it. All right,
he doesn't have to act that part.
Okay, what's in the works for you now? Are you going to be doing this convention through the summer?
Next week is College Park, Maryland, suburb of Baltimore.
Does this go through the summer and then the...
Then after that, I'm going to Paris for Whoopi. No convention, just for me.
Just for a little vacation time.
A little vacation, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now what film projects or TV projects are still?
I have a couple of irons in the fire, but at this point, we actors tend to be superstitious.
Yeah.
If we
jinx yourself,
right? Yes, yes. Okay. So until that iron's ready to be pulled out, at that point, invite me back again, and I'll tell you all about it.
We would love to have you. We would love to have you anytime. Really appreciate you coming in this morning. I know you're busy.
I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
It has been fun. Thank
yeah,
you very
you're
much.
A good wake-up tonic.
Yeah. Thanks. Hey, thanks for Star Trek, too.
Thank you for supporting us so well.
Yeah. Go over to the Holiday Inn Hurstbourne off of Interstate 64. It will happen tomorrow morning, tomorrow and Sunday from 11 until 6. Anything you can think of relating to Star Trek and Mr. Sulu in person will be there. So it's well worth the time and effort to get over there. It's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. I've been in radio a long time. I have no autographs. I've never even thought of doing that to somebody I've interviewed. But I have a picture here of Mr. Sulu that says, to Ron, my buddy.
And you didn't even get me one.
Oh,
I can't believe
God.
It.
I love this. Duke, what do you think, man?
I tell you what.
Nice guy.
He's very, very nice guy.
Very literate.
I did not get introduced to him because of his entourage and everything. But I just walked up to him when y'all were taking the pictures. I said, would you mind? He goes, not at all.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, get out of here. No, he was such a nice gentleman.
Good interview.
But we must. No.
Don't start doing Captain Kirk.
We.
Oh, God, that was fun.